drive a Chevy, 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
Welcome.
Mama says
this is Dr. Steve Nurse. And this is our next series of Is Abled, and it's a series on dementia and Alzheimer's. And what we would like to do here is let you know what you need to know about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The series is 6 episodes, and we will discuss both dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The main person interviewed is Brad Tyson. Dr. Brad Tyson has been a clinical neuropsychologist since 2014 and specializes in cognitive assessment. He has clinical and research interests in dementia, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, substance abuse, chronic pain, and general medical disorders associated with cognitive impairment. He was trained in neuropsychology and neuroimaging research at Dartmouth Medical Center in New Hampshire. He currently works for the Eastside Neuroscience Institute at Evergreen and Overlake Medical Centers. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and we are here again, and Dr. Brad Tyson is here with us also, the brainiest guy I know on brains. So we're going to start out. We'll give him all the accolades first and make sure he can answer all the questions. So, Brad, one of the things we're going to talk about today is support services and what kinds of things are available out there for people who experience dementia, but I think also even more important, those folks, family members that see persons who have dementia and watch how it affects them and what's gonna help them. They're watching the person generally move downhill on a pretty slow path. But What is out there, Brad? What kinds of services? I know you have some support group. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So thanks, Steve, for the question. What you would first want to do is you would want to get them evaluated. And sometimes that's a tricky process. But you just really need to approach the subject carefully. Family members, talking to the individual and telling them that they should mention to their physician that they're having some cognitive problems, some memory problems. And, you know, you can mention that maybe you've noticed some cognitive changes in the individual, and that at the next annual wellness visit that either the individual needs to tell the physician, or you as a loved one can accompany them to that doctor visit. And you can pair that visit with some fun activity. And I think that it's really important in the way that you frame this. You know, you wouldn't want to say something like, we think that you're developing dementia, but rather that you have some cognitive problems that we've noticed that we would like to have, you know, discussed with a doctor to see, you know, what can be done about it. You know, this could be an easy fix. We know that memory loss and cognitive decline in older adults is not necessarily due to dementia. In fact, it's often due to something that we can address, something that we can fix even. So things like sleep apnea or sleep problems. Okay, it's a very common reversible cause of cognitive decline, anxiety, stress, getting older is a cause of cognitive decline. You know, certain medications, alcohol, nutritional deficiencies. And even if you have a balanced diet, you know, somebody could have a nutritional deficiency based on, you know, maybe some problem with their gut absorption or some medication that they're taking. For example, you know, proton pump inhibitors, which are really common medications used for acid reflux, reduce your ability to absorb certain vitamins, particularly vitamin B12. And vitamin B12 is very important for signaling in the nervous system. So if somebody has a vitamin B12 deficiency, for example, they can have cognitive problems that can be resolved with supplementation, or if it's an absorption problem, shots. So there's, you know, there's a lot of things that we can sort of evaluate here, but the first, you know, step is really to get the loved one evaluated. And if they're resistant to this idea, and which commonly they are, then also have, you know, a trusted friend, maybe outside the family, also talk with the loved one.
You know, that's really interesting because I have to go in for my wellness visit every year, and that's about the only thing that they do that even they that involves memory is they give you, you know, three unrelated words, and you have to then they talk, and you have to do that, or you have to draw a clock that's quarter after two. And you can't use a digital clock for that. Mm-hmm. So, but I also noticed, like, even with my blood work, the doctor said, well, this is unusual. You have too much potassium, and normally old people have not enough potassium. And have you been feeling dizzy because your calcium is low? And so I think what you're saying really, really resonates with me. I know folic acid even can affect a lot of things, and probably as we get older, those there are more chemical imbalances and electrolytes and all kinds of stuff that affect our thinking.
Yeah, and an important thing here is to note that your brain just becomes more vulnerable as you get older, less resilient. So things that maybe you could handle, your brain could handle when you're 40 years old, such as, you know, a poor night's sleep, or, you know, a stressful situation, or, you know, sleep apnea, or, you know, an infection, right? These are things that as you get older have the potential to really affect you cognitively. So I think that's one of the ways in terms of talking with a loved one is to really reinforce that maybe this is something that is an easy fix. Maybe this is something that we can nip in the bud. And if you frame it as, you know, something that is helpful for, you know, overall physical health and longevity, that sometimes helps the buy-in of the loved one. And then, you know, if things don't work out and someone's very, very resistant to this idea, then what you can also do as a family member is actually call the doctor. While the doctor can't give you any information about, you know, their patients, you as a family member can state your concerns and say, hey, we as a family have noticed, you know, these cognitive difficulties. Is there a way that we can initiate a workup for this? And you're right, it does include a brief cognitive screener like Montreal Cognitive Assessment, which has the clock drawing test as you're describing. But it might also, you know, as you say, involve a blood test. So we can look at, you know, B vitamins, we can look at, you know, thyroid, you know, hormones and things like that, things that can be corrected fairly easily. And you might have a sleep study, and, you know, if there are concerns of the doctor, then they'll refer you to someone like me, a neuropsychologist, who does more comprehensive cognitive testing and can really hone in on the diagnosis. And when we talk about the future of dementia diagnosis, we're really talking about things like biomarkers. And these are increasing, and they're becoming more and more, sensitive and specific. So like brain imaging, for example, is a biomarker. It's not really there yet. I mean, we can't, diagnose most forms of dementia with a brain MRI, but there are advanced neuroimaging techniques. There are, lumbar puncture. We could look at, things in the cerebral spinal fluid. Soon there's going to be blood tests that are available that might be able to rule out certain forms of dementia. So these, we'll talk about this, in the next episode, but this represents the future of diagnosis, and we're on the doorsteps of that.
And I think you're, what you say too, in how you approach it with a person, is so critical. I mean, a person can have a small mole on their nose that they have removed because they've got, potential for skin cancer, but it doesn't mean they're going to die of melanoma. It's and the same thing with somebody with a short memory loss. I mean, I sometimes put my coffee in the microwave to warm up and forget it until 10, I get doing something else. So that doesn't necessarily mean that I have dementia. It just means that I've got my brain going on something else. So I like your approach that let's see if this is something that's an easy fix. And I don't think, people think of sleep apnea as snoring more than anything else, probably. So that would be the best thing. And I think it's nice that we now, at least under Medicare, have to have a primary care physician. So someone who at least sees us on a semi-regular basis and can also evaluate how we're thinking, cognitively. What are
Yeah,
some,
and
go ahead.
yeah, I was just going to add on to that over the age of 60, you should be really getting, pretty regular cognitive screeners. And in that way, I mean, something like the Montreal Cognitive Assessment is a 30-item sort of cognitive screener. And so you can track how somebody does on that particular test over time. And so we say, 26 to 30 is about average. 20 to 25, we start to get concerned. Under 20 is, maybe dementia. So that is a good way. It's not, perfect. It's sort of a rough, evaluation of this, but it can tell us if things are declining. And one of the things that you mentioned, or alluded to was really important, and that is early diagnosis. Right, the earlier that you get someone in, to get that mole off their nose, right? It's the same sort of thing. The earlier you get someone in for cognitive decline, the more we can do about it. If somebody has progressed to the point that they have full-blown dementia, the treatments that we have for dementia at this point are not excellent, and we don't have a cure for most forms of dementia. So the earlier we get into this, the more things we can do about it.
Am I correct in assuming that with medications for that are supposedly recommended for dementia, that we have some that can slow down the progression of dementia but not reverse it? Is that fair to say?
It's fairly accurate. So we have medications, for example, for Alzheimer's disease, a common medication used called Aricept or donepezil. It doesn't slow the progression of the disease, but it does help slow the progression of memory loss. The problem with these medications is that when you take them, people don't notice any improvement in memory. And for the most part, they don't really improve memory. But what they do, and we know from extensive research, is that they slow memory loss. So these drugs can keep somebody's memory stable for as much as 3 years. So they are useful medications, but they don't slow the progression of the disease itself. And they don't reverse it either. We have some treatments on the horizon that are looking very promising for several different forms of dementia. And those are, like I said, very promising, and we look forward to those.
You know, the ones, the drugs that you see advertised all the time, you know, Prevagen, those kinds of things, are they basically fancy vitamins? I don't know a better way to put it, but is that basically what they are? Is almost like a multivitamin for memory or something?
I would recommend a multivitamin over Prevagen. I don't think Prevagen has shown really any benefit outside of studies conducted by the company that makes Prevagen. So there's been some really good research recently on the beneficial effects of a multivitamin. So we know that a multivitamin can help reduce dementia risk. We can know that changes in diet, the Mediterranean diet, for example, can reduce, dementia risk.
And
There's a
that's
whole
more,
list of
is that more vegetables and fruit? Is that kind of
Well,
the.
so the Mediterranean diet, and your listeners can look it up online. It's pretty easy to follow. It's like, chicken and fish instead of red meat, leafy green vegetables and fruits, whole grains and nuts, and lots of olive oil. Olive oil seems to be one of the most important components, at least for reducing Alzheimer's risk. And there's some suggestion, although I don't know how precise this is, but there is some suggestion that olive oil might help break up amyloid plaque, which is one of the constituent components of Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, it's
So,
when you go through that list of those, I almost broke out into song when you went through that list of leafy green vegetables. These are a few of my favorite things, but
I'm not sure that's how that song goes.
no, I don't think so. But well, I see that on the island now, this Gwen who used to be with the Yardbirds is coming to Vashon, and he wrote the song to everything, turn, 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 there is a season, you know, and now it's a times to text and a times to email, you know, so you know, he's updated his stuff. One of the th things that is interesting is to me is do you think, I know this is probably a way out question, but I just saw a study that was done that had, it was a cancer study, and it had to do with using AI to look at literally thousands and millions of cells. Do you think that it may have an application for dementia and Alzheimer's at some point in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think AI is going to revolutionize the medical field. And we're trying for something like they also have in cancer research, and that's the precision medicine approach, where we sort of customize the treatments for each individual. And so we have a good idea of what maybe what specific genes to target, and then modify our therapies to target those genes. I think that's one of the future, treatment avenues for dementia.
I have a friend who does research on HIV and some other diseases like that, and that's exactly what he was saying. And was that, you know, 30, 40 years ago when we were, you know, using chemotherapy for cancer, many times the immune system was so compromised that the chemotherapy was what killed them. They didn't die of cancer. They died of, you know, the immune system going down. And he was saying now that with the stuff that they're doing, it's the whole idea is to find something that attacks that specific type of cancer cell, and not be so overall invasive and, you know, kill all the good cells too. I know that's not a very technical way.
You've just summed up precision medicine.
Yeah. Well, that was my goal. I did want to sum that up. thank you.
Success.
I hear them, with prostate cancer now, they're using the radium beads and things like that to be more precise. So, that would be. Would in doing that, do they take like entire, you know, blood tests and they really map your system out and see how it fits with certain kinds of chemicals or chemotherapy? Is that how they do that?
Well, for example, there is a new treatment, a study going on in England right now, looking at Parkinson's disease. And what they do is they use the individual's own stem cells and genetically modify them and then inject them straight into the substantia nigra, which is the part of the brain that produces dopamine, which is the part of the brain that degenerates in Parkinson's disease. And the idea is that if we inject these, you know, stem cells into this part of the brain, hopefully they will turn in to these substantia nigra dopamine producing cells. And that's been used as a treatment before with some success. Now it seems like we've really honed in on the proper way to do this, and we'll await the results of that study here at the end of the year. But if that is successful and it's looking promising, this might be a treatment that's available relatively soon.
So in other words, we're instead of saying, physician, heal thyself, we're saying body, heal thyself, you know, that the body.
Through thy physician.
Yeah. What's that?
Through thy physician, unless you want to remove your own stem cells and inject them into your
Yes,
brain.
That's right. Yes, that's very true. How about, you know, are there some, you know, one of the things that I was looking here in the in this list of factors, one of the things it says is drinking too much, and then one of the other things it says is abstinence from alcohol. Does that make any sense at all?
That research is really muddled. You know, when I was in graduate school, there was this sort of explosion of research on the Mediterranean diet and how the Mediterranean diet is very helpful for reducing dementia risk, particularly Alzheimer's risk. And part of the Mediterranean diet was a glass of wine every night. Well, so there's been a lot of studies into, well, what is it about wine that seems to be helpful? And it's red wine in particular. And it seems to be the high antioxidants in the skin of the red grape. It's not the alcohol that is doing your brain, you know, this benefit. There is some suggestion that maybe moderate alcohol use reduces dementia risk. You know, I don't really buy into that. Mm-hmm. And we know that alcohol is neurotoxic. And I think the more recent research that has come out about that is pretty clear. This is a study done by the UK Biobank, where they have this, you know, giant database of all of these people and their health information, including how much they drink and repeated brain MRIs. And they put out a study a few years back that shows that, you know, I think the time point was 3 years or something, but they looked at people, they gave them a brain image, and then they tracked how much they drank over the course of 3 years, and then they gave them another brain MRI. And those people who drank more had a thinner cortex at the three-year mark than those who drank less. And it was a dose-dependent relationship. The more alcohol you drank, the thinner your cortex was. And so I think that makes it pretty clear what alcohol does to the brain. Now, if there's other sort of protective, you know, molecules in there, you know, I guess that's possible. But, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me that over the years. And typically, I recommend that people limit alcohol as much as possible. And especially if they're taking medications. You know, there's a number of medications that interact very poorly with alcohol. And that could be driving cognitive decline in some people.
Yeah. And I guess it's if you take one glass of wine a day, it kind of depends then a little bit too how big the glass is. So,
yeah. Well, you know, one glass of wine a night is probably okay. You know, really with alcohol and its effect on the brain, you really need to be drinking a lot, you know, and especially after the age of 40, when our brain starts becoming more vulnerable. And what's really devastating to the brain is alcohol withdrawal. So if you drink for a long time and then you stop cold turkey, that can have a pretty devastating effect on the brain that is permanent. So when we see cases of, you know, alcohol-related dementia, we typically see a history of malnutrition due to alcoholism and alcohol withdrawal, oftentimes several episodes of alcohol withdrawal.
Yeah. I think we've got a few more minutes here. And how about, is there any study? Well, I guess the one thing I would say is, you know, it's interesting because I did a lot of research in, not in this field, but in the field of education. And it seems to me that if you study something enough, you can find a way for it to work and you can find a way for it not to work. And
sure.
I think that's with, like you say, with a lot of these things, like with the, you know, it comes from, that the antioxidants come from the, the grape skin and not from the alcohol that's produced later.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on that and say, you know, I've taken a class on how to lie with statistics. It was a class that was teaching us how to identify, you know, using statistics to, you know, amplify certain findings. So if you're really good at statistics, that's something that you can interpret the data in certain ways to maybe be a little bit misleading. I think that, you know, this is maybe a hunch or maybe even a conspiracy theory, but I think that it would be interesting to look at a lot of the studies where there's this promotion of alcohol use as good for the brain and look at how much the authors of those studies drink. Yeah. If there's a bias, inherent bias in there, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's like saying, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Crest, and right. You know, it depends on where you got those 4 out of 5 dentists. And I mean, as I did research, the more I did research into my area, the more variables I found that I hadn't included. You know, you talk about even diets from different parts of the country. It can vary differently, and we can, you know, we can blame something on, let's say, ethnicity, and yet it actually is more cultural foods or things that, you know, it's not the ethnicity, it's habits.
That's how we found out about the Mediterranean diet. People who live around the Mediterranean have a lower risk of dementia.
Yeah.
It's not the ocean water, you know.
No. And let's talk about that in our next episode. I want to talk a little bit more about the Mediterranean diet and how that's also had some effects on other things like multiple sclerosis. So let's go for now, and we will have one more episode and conclude this.
Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys like him. I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him. while he still knows who I am.
This is Dr. Mama Steve Nurse, and I want to thank everybody for listening to our series on dementia and Alzheimer's disease on Voice of Vashon, the Dynamo of Washington. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
While he still knows who I am.